wool blanket bunched up between her and the back of the couch. A bowl of popcorn on the coffee table, reduced to a handful of cold, unpopped kernels. A fat orange cat prowling the mantel, hissing at the radiator. And Luce. Luce was her sister, the baby sister in her arms. Luce felt herself rocking in her seat at the casino, aching to remember all of this. Just as quickly, the impression faded, replaced by another. Luce as a toddler, chasing Vera up the stairs, down the stairs, the wide worn steps beneath her thumping feet, her chest tight from breathless laughter, when the doorbell sounded and a fair, slick-haired boy arrived to pick Vera up for a date, and she stopped and straightened her clothes and turned her back, turned away. A heartbeat later, and Luce was a teenager herself, with a mess of curly, shoulder-length black hair. Sprawled on Vera's denim bedspread, the coarse fabric, somehow a comfort, flipping through Vera's secret diary. "He loves me," Vera had scrawled again and again and again, her handwriting getting loopier and loopier. And then the pages pulled away, her sister's angry face looming, the tracks of her tears clear. And then again, a different scene, Luce older still, maybe 17. She braced herself for what was coming. Snow, pouring from the sky like soft white static. Vera and a few friends ice skating on the frozen pond behind their house, gliding in swift circles, happy and laughing, and at the frayed icy edge of the pond, Luce crouched down, the cold seeping through her thin clothes while she laced up her skates, in a hurry, as usual, to catch up with her sister. And beside her, a warmth she didn't have to look at to identify, Daniel, who was silent, moody, his skates already tightly laced. She could feel the urge to kiss him, and yet no shadows were visible. The evening and everything about it were star-dotted and glittering, endlessly clear and full of possibility. Luce searched for the shadows, then realized that their absence made sense. These were Vera's memories, and the snow made everything harder to see. Still, Daniel must know, as he had known when he dove into that lake. He must have sensed it every single time. Did he ever care what became of people like Vera after Luce was killed? There came a bursting sound from Luce's side of the lake, like the letting out of a parachute. And then, a blooming shot of red-hot fire in the middle of a blizzard. A huge column of bright orange flames shooting into the sky at the edge of the pond, where Luce had been. The other skaters rushed senselessly toward it, barreling across the pond. But the ice was melting, rapidly, catastrophically, sending their skates plunging through to the frigid water underneath. Vera's scream echoed through the blue night, her frozen look of agony, all that Luce could see. In the casino, Vera yanked her hand back, shaking it as if she'd been burned. Her lips quivered a few times before they formed the words. "It's you," she shook her head. "But it can't be." "Vera," Luce whispered, reaching her hand out again to her sister. She wanted to hold her, to take all the pain Vera had ever been caused and transfer it to herself. "No." Vera shook her head, backing away and wagging a finger at Luce. "No, no, no." She backed into the dealer at the table behind her, tripping over him and sending a giant stack of poker chips cascading off the table. The colored disc slid across the floor, causing a ripple of oohs and ahs from gamblers who leaped from their seats to scoop them up. "Damn it, Vera," a squat man bellowed over the din. As he waddled to their table in a cheap gray polyester suit and scuffed black shoes, Luce shared a worried glance with Miles and Shelby. Three underage kids wanted nothing to do with the pit boss, but he was still chewing Vera out, his lip curled up in disgust.
"How many times?"
Vera had found her feet again, but kept staring, terrified at Luce, as if Luce were the devil instead of her sister a lifetime removed. Vera's coal-lined eyes were white with terror as she stammered.
"She can't be here."
"Christ," the pit boss muttered, checking out Luce and her friends, then speaking into a walkie-talkie.
"Get me security. Got a couple of hoodlum kids."
Luce shrank back between Miles and Shelby, who said through gritted teeth, "How about one of those step-throughs, Miles?" Before Miles could reply, three men with enormous wrists and necks appeared and towered over them. The pit boss waved his hands.
"Take them to the pen. See what other kind of trouble they've been in."
"I've got a better idea," a girl's voice growled from behind the wall of security guards. All heads whipped around to find the voice,
but only Luce's face lit up.
Arian!
The tiny girl flashed Luce a grin as she sidled through the crowd. With 5-inch platform wedges, her hair done up all crazy, and her eyes nearly swallowed by dark eyeliner, Arian fit in with the casino's weird clientele perfectly. Nobody seemed to know quite what to make of her, least of all Shelby and Miles. The pit boss veered over to confront Arian. He reeked of shoe polish and cough medicine.
"Do you need to be taken to the pen, too, Missy?"
"Ooh, sounds fun." Arian's eyes widened. "Alas, I'm overbooked tonight. I've got front-row tickets to Blue Man Group, and of course there's dinner with Cher after the show. One more thing I know I had to do." She tapped her chin, then looked over at Luce. "Ah, yes. Get these three guys the hell out of here. 'Scuse us."
She blew a kiss at the fuming pit boss, shrugged an apology at Vera, and snapped her fingers. Then all the lights went out. 13. 6 days. Rushing them through the labyrinth of the dark casino, Arian moved as if she had night vision.
"Stay cool, you three," she sang. "I'll have you out of here in a flash."
She held Luce's wrist in a tight grip, and Luce in turn held Miles's hand. Miles held Shelby's, as she cursed at the indignity of having to bring up the escape caboose. Arian led them unerringly, and though Luce couldn't see what she was doing, she could hear people grunt and exclaim as Arian shouldered them aside.
"Sorry about that," she'd call. "Whoops," and "Excuse me."
She took them down dark hallways packed with anxious tourists, using their cell phones as flashlights. Up darker staircases, stuffy with disuse and crammed with empty cardboard boxes. Finally, she kicked open an emergency exit, ushering them through it and into a dark, narrow alley. The alleyway was tucked between the Mirage and another towering hotel. A row of dumpsters sent out the foul odor of expensive, rotting food. A trickle of acid green gutter water formed a vile little river, splitting the alley in half. Straight ahead, in the middle of the bright, bustling, neon-lit strip, an old-fashioned black street clock struck 12.
"Ah," Arian inhaled deeply. "The beginning of another glorious day in Sin City. I like to start it off right with a big breakfast. Who's hungry?"
Shelby stammered, looking at Luce, then Arian, then at the casino.
"What just... how did..."
Miles's gaze was fixed on the shiny marbled scar that spanned one side of Arian's neck. Luce was used to Arian by now, but it was clear that her friends didn't know what to make of her. Arian waved her finger at Miles.
"This guy looks like he can eat his weight in waffles. Come on, I know a filthy diner."
As they clipped up the alley toward the street, Miles turned to Luce and mouthed,
"That was awesome."
Luce nodded. It was all she could do to keep up with Arian as she jogged across the strip. Vera. She couldn't get over it. All those memories glimpsed in a flash. They'd been painful and startling, and she could only imagine what it had been like for Vera. But for Luce, they had also been deeply satisfying. More than with any of her glimpses through the announcers so far, this time she felt as if she'd experienced one of her past lives. Strangely, she'd also seen something she'd never even thought about. Her previous selves had lives, lives that had been full and meaningful before Daniel had shown up. Arian led them to an IHOP, a squat brown stucco building that looked so ancient it could have predated everything else on the strip. It seemed more claustrophobic and sadder than other IHOPs. Shelby led the way inside, pushing through the glass doors, chiming the cheap jingle bells duct-taped to the top. She grabbed a fistful of mints from the bowl by the register before claiming a booth in the far back corner. Arian slid in next to her, while Luce and Miles took the other side of the cracked orange leather booth. With a whistle and a quick circular gesture, Arian ordered a round of coffee from the plump, pretty waitress with a pencil stuck in her hair. The rest of them focused on a thick, spiral-bound laminated menu. Turning the pages was a battle against the ancient maple syrup welding the whole thing together, and a good way to avoid talking about the trouble they just narrowly escaped. Finally, Luce had to ask,
"What are you doing here, Arian?"
"Ordering something with a funny name. Rudy Tootie, I guess, since they don't have moons over my hammy here. I can never decide." Luce rolled her eyes. Arian didn't need to act so coy. It was obvious her rescue effort hadn't been coincidental.
"You know what I mean."
"These are strange days, Luce. I figured I'd pass them in an equally strange city.
Yeah, well, they're almost over, aren't they, according to the truce timeline?
Arian put down her coffee cup and cradled her chin in her palm.
Well, hallelujah! They are teaching you something about school, after all.
Yes and no, Lou said. I just overheard Roland saying something about how Daniel would be counting down the minutes. He said it had something to do with the truce, but I didn't know exactly how many minutes we were talking about.
Beside her, Miles's body seemed to have stiffened at the mention of Daniel. When the waitress arrived to take their orders, he barked his out first, practically shoving the menu back at her.
Steak and eggs, rare.
Ooh, manly, Arian said, eyeing Miles approvingly in the midst of the eeny, meeny, miny, mo game she was playing on her menu.
Rooty, tooty, fresh and fruity it is.
She enunciated as properly as the Queen of England might, keeping a remarkably straight face.
Pigs in a blanket for me, Shelby said. Actually, make that an egg white omelet, no cheese.
Ah, what the hell, pigs in a blanket.
The waitress turned to Luce.
How about you, hon?
Breakfast sampler. Luce smiled apologetically on behalf of her friends. Scrambled, hold the meat. The waitress nodded, padding off toward the kitchen.
Okay, so what else did you hear? Arian asked.
Lou started playing with the carafe of syrup next to the salt and pepper. There was some talk of, you know, end times. Snickering, Shelby splashed three little tubs of creamer into her coffee.
End times? You actually buy into that crap? I mean, how many millennia have we been waiting around for that? And humans think they've been patient for a mere couple thousand years? Ha! Like anything is ever going to change.
Arian looked about a second away from putting Shelby in her place, but then she set down her coffee.
How rude of me to not even introduce myself to your friends, Luce.
We know who you are, Shelby said. Yeah, there was a whole chapter on you in my 8th grade History of Angels textbook, Miles said.
Arian clapped.
And they told me that book had been banned.
Seriously? You're in a textbook? Luce laughed.
Why so surprised? You don't find me historic?
Arian turned back to Shelby and Miles.
Now, tell me all about yourselves. I need to know who my girl's been palling around with.
Lapsed, non-believing Nephilim. Shelby raised her hand. Miles stared at his food.
And the ineffectual great-great-great to the nth degree grandson of an angel.
That's not true. Luce bumped Miles's shoulder.
Arian, you should have seen how he helped us step through this shadow tonight. He was great. That's why we're here, because he read this book, and the next thing you know, he could...
Yeah, I was wondering about that, Arian said sarcastically.
But what concerns me more is this one. She gestured at Shelby. Arian's face was much graver than Luce was accustomed to. Even her manic, light blue eyes looked steady.
It's not a good time to be a lapsed anything right now. Everything's in flux, but there will be a reckoning, and you will have to choose one side or the other.
Arian stared deliberately at Shelby.
We all have to know where we stand.
Before anyone could respond, the waitress reappeared, wielding a huge brown plastic tray of food.
Well, how's this for speedy service? She asked. Now, which one of you had the pigs?
Me.
Shelby startled the waitress with the quickness of her reach for the plate.
Anybody need any ketchup?
They shook their heads.
Extra butter?
Luce pointed down at the ice cream scoop of butter already on her pancakes.
We're all set. Thanks.
If we need anything, Arian said, beaming down at the whipped cream happy face on her plate.
We'll holler.
Oh, I know you will.
The waitress chuckled, tucking the tray under her arm.
Holler like the world's about to end, this one will.
After she left, Arian was the only one who ate. She plucked a blueberry from the pancake's nose, popped it into her mouth, and licked her fingers with relish. Finally, she glanced around the table.
Dig in, Arian said. There's nothing good about cold steak and eggs.
She sighed.
Come on, guys. You've read the history books. Don't you know the drill?
I haven't, Luce said. I don't know any drills. Arian sucked meditatively on her fork.
Good point. In that case, allow me to present my version to you, which is more fun than the history books anyway, because I won't censor the big fights and curses and all the sexy stuff. My version has everything but 3D, which, I have to say, is totally overrated. Did you see that movie with...
She noticed the blank looks on their faces.
Oh, never mind. Okay, it starts millennia ago. Now, do I need to catch you up on Satan?
Waged an early power struggle against God.
Miles's voice was a monotone, as if he were repeating a third-grade lesson plan while he speared a bit of steak with his fork.
Before then, they were super tight, Shelby added, dousing her pigs in blankets with syrup. I mean, God called Satan his morning star, so it's not like Satan wasn't worthy or beloved.
But he would rather reign in hell than serve in heaven, Luce chimed in. She might not have read the Nephilim histories, but she'd read Paradise Lost, or at least the Cliff's Notes.
Very nice,
Arian beamed, leaning toward Luce.
You know, Gabby was big friends with Milton's daughters back in the day. She likes to take credit for that phrase, and I'm all, aren't you enough people's darling already?
But whatever. Arian moved in on a forkful of Luce's eggs.
Damn, these are good. Can we get some hot sauce over here? She bellowed toward the kitchen.
Okay, where were we?
Satan, Shelby said through a mouthful of pancake.
Right, so, say what you will about El Diablo Grande, but he is...
Arian tossed her head.
Somewhat responsible for introducing the idea of free will among angels. I mean, he really gave the rest of us something to think about. On which side do you throw your weight?
Given the choice, a whole lot of angels fell.
How many? Miles asked.
The fallen? Enough to cause something of a stalemate.
Arian looked thoughtful for a moment, then grimaced and called out to the waitress.
Hot sauce, does it exist in this establishment?
What about the angels who fell but didn't side with... Luce broke off, thinking of Daniel. She was aware that she was whispering, but this felt like a really big thing to be discussing in the middle of a diner, even a mostly empty diner in the middle of the night. Arian lowered her voice, too.
Oh, there are plenty of angels who fell, but still technically ally with God. But then there are those who threw in with Satan. We call them demons, even though they're just fallen angels who made really poor choices. Not like it's been easy for anyone. Since the fall, angels and demons have been neck and neck, split down the middle, yada yada yada.
She slathered butter into the pancake's nose.
But all that may be about to change.
Luce looked down at her eggs, unable to eat.
So, before, you seem to be suggesting that my allegiance had something to do with that?
Shelby looked slightly less doubtful than she usually did.
Not yours exactly.
Arian shook her head.
I know it feels like we've all been hanging in the balance forever, but in the end, it's going to come down to one powerful angel choosing a side. When that happens, the scale finally tips. That's when it matters which side you're on.
Arian's words reminded Luce of being locked all the way up in that tiny chapel with Miss Sophia, how she kept saying the fate of the universe had something to do with Luce and Daniel. It had sounded crazy at the time, and Miss Sophia was evil bananas. And even though Luce wasn't certain exactly what everyone was talking about, she knew it had to do with Daniel coming back around.
It's Daniel, she said softly. The angel who can tip the scales is Daniel.
It explained the agony he carried all the time, like a 2-ton suitcase. It explained why he'd been away from her so long. The only thing it didn't explain was why there seemed to be some question in Arian's mind about which side the scales would tip onto. Which side would win the war? Arian opened her mouth, but instead of answering, she attacked Luce's plate again.
Can I get some freaking hot sauce over here? She yelled.
A shadow fell over their table.
I'll give you something fiery.
Luce looked behind her and recoiled at the sight. A very tall boy in a long brown trench coat, unbuttoned so that Luce could see a flash of something silver tucked inside his belt. He had a shaved head, a slim, straight nose, a mouthful of perfect teeth, and white eyes. Eyes utterly empty of color. No irises, no pupils, none at all. His strange, vacant expression reminded Luce of the outcast girl. Though Luce hadn't seen that girl closely enough to figure out what was wrong with her eyes, she now had a pretty good guess. Shelby looked at the boy, swallowed hard, and tucked into her breakfast.
Nothing to do with me, she mumbled.
Save it. Arian said to the boy. You can put it on the fist sandwich I'm about to serve you.
Luce watched, wide-eyed, as Tiny Arion stood up and wiped her hands on her jeans.
BRB, guys. Oh, and Luce, remind me to berate you for this when I get back.
Before Luce could ask what this guy had to do with her, Arion had grabbed him by the earlobe, twisted hard, and slammed his head down on the glass display counter near the bar. The noise shattered the lazy late-night quiet of the restaurant. The guy yelped like a child as Arion twisted his ear the other way and climbed on top of him. Bellowing in pain, he started bucking his lean body until he'd flung Arion off and onto the glass case. She rolled along its length and came to a stop at the end, knocking over a towering lemon meringue pie, then leaped to her feet on the bar. She somersaulted back toward him and caught him in a headlock with her legs, then set to work pounding his face with her small fists.
"Arion!" the waitress shrieked. "Not my pies. I try to be tolerant, but I have my livelihood to look after."
"Ah, fine," Arion shouted. "We'll take it to the kitchen." She released the guy, slid to the floor, and booted him with her platform heel. He blindly stumbled toward the door that led to the diner's kitchen.
"Come on, you three," she called to their table. "Might as well learn something."
Miles and Shelby threw down their napkins, reminding Luce of the way kids at Dover used to drop everything and run screaming through the halls, yelling, "Fight! Fight!" any time there was the slightest rumor of a scuffle. Luce followed behind, a little more hesitantly. If Arion was suggesting that this guy had showed up because of her, it raised a lot of other hairy questions. What about the people who'd taken Dawn, and that arrow-shooting outcast girl Cam had killed at Noyo Point? A loud slam sounded from inside the kitchen, and three terrified men in dirty aprons rushed out. By the time Luce made it past them through the swinging door, Arion was holding down the boy with her foot on his head, while Miles and Shelby tied him up with the kind of twine used to secure a tenderloin. His empty eyes stared up at Luce, but also through her. They'd gagged him with a kitchen rag, so when Arion taunted, "You want to chill out for a little bit? In the meat cooler?" the boy could only groan. He'd stopped putting up any kind of fight. Grabbing him by the collar, Arion dragged him across the floor and into the walk-in refrigerator, gave him a few more kicks for good measure, then calmly shut the door. She dusted off her hands and turned to Luce with a ticked-off look on her face.
"Who's after me, Arion?"
Luce's voice was shaking.
"A lot of people, babe."
"Was that?" Luce thought back to her meeting with Cam.
"An outcast?"
Arion cleared her throat. Shelby coughed.
"Daniel said he couldn't be with me because he attracted too much attention. He said I'd be safe at Shoreline, but they came there, too."
"Only because they traced you leaving campus. You attract attention, too, Luce. And when you're out in the world tearing up casinos and the like, we can sense it. That goes for the bad guys, too. That's why you're at that school in the first place."
"What?"
It was Shelby.
"You guys are just hiding her with us? What about our safety? What if these outcast people just showed up on campus?"
Miles said nothing, just looked with alarm from Luce to Arion.
"You didn't understand that the Nephilim camouflage you?" Arion asked. "Daniel didn't tell you about their, whatever, protective coloration?"
Luce's mind rolled back to the night Daniel dropped her off at Shoreline.
Maybe he did say something about a shield, but there had been so many other things racing through her mind that night. It had been enough to try to process Daniel's leaving her. Now she felt a queasy wave of guilt.
"I didn't understand. He didn't elaborate, just kept saying I had to stay on campus. I thought he was being too protective."
"Daniel knows what he's doing," Arion shrugged. "Most of the time."
She poked her tongue at the corner of her mouth thoughtfully.
"Okay, sometimes. Every now and then."
"So you mean whoever's after her can't see her when she's with a bunch of Nephilim?"
This was Miles, who seemed to have found his tongue again.
"Actually, the outcast can't see at all," Arion said. "They were blinded during the revolt. I was getting to that part of the story. It's good. The putting out of eyes and all that Oedipal jazz."
She sighed.
"Oh, well, yeah, the outcast. They can see the burning of your soul, which is a lot more difficult to discern when you're with a bunch of other Nephilim."
Miles's eyes grew wide. Shelby was chewing nervously on her nails.
"So that's how they mistook Dawn for me."
"It's how Meat Cooler Boy found you tonight, anyway," Arion said. "Hell, that's how I found you, too.
You're like a candle in a dark cave out here.
She grabbed a can of whipped cream from the counter and shot a squirt into her mouth.
I like a little non-dairy pick-me-up after a brawl.
She yawned, which made Luce look up at the green digital clock on the counter. It was 2:30 in the morning.
Well, as much as I love kicking asses and taking names, it's way past curfew for you three.
Arian whistled through her teeth, and a thick blob of an announcer bled out from the shadows under the prep tables.
I never do this, okay? If anyone asks, I never do this. Traveling by announcers is very dangerous. Hear that, hero?
She bumped Miles on his forehead, then flicked her fingers open. The shadow bounced instantly into a perfect door shape in the middle of the kitchen.
But I'm on the clock here, and it's the fastest way to get you guys home and to safety.
Nice, Miles said, like he was taking notes. Arian shook her head at him.
Don't get any ideas. I'm taking you back to school, where you will stay.
She made eye contact with each of them.
Or you're going to have to answer to me.
You're coming with us? Shelby asked, finally showing just a little glimmer of awe toward Arian.
Looks that way.
Arian winked at Luce.
You've turned into some kind of firecracker. Someone's got to keep an eye on you.
Stepping through with Arian was even smoother than it had been on the way to Vegas. It felt like coming inside after being out in the sun. The light was a little dimmer when you walked through the door, but you blinked a few times and got used to it. Luce was almost disappointed to find herself back in her dorm room after the flash and excitement of Las Vegas. But then she thought of Dawn and of Vera. Almost disappointed. Her eyes settled on all the familiar signs that they were back. Two unmade bunk beds, the clutter of plants on the windowsill, Shelby's yoga mat stacked in the corner, Stephen's copy of Plato's Republic sitting bookmarked on Luce's desk, and one thing she was not expecting to see. Daniel, dressed all in black, tending a blazing fire in the hearth.
Ugh!
Shelby screamed, tumbling back into Miles's arms.
You scared the hell out of me, and in my own place of sanctuary. Not cool, Daniel.
She shot Luce a dirty look, like she'd had something to do with his appearance. Daniel ignored Shelby, just said calmly to Luce, Welcome back. She didn't know whether to run to him or burst into tears.
Daniel!
Daniel!
Arian gasped. Her eyes widened as if she'd seen a ghost. Daniel froze, clearly not having expected to encounter Arian, either.
I just need her for a moment. Then I'll go.
He sounded guilty, even scared.
Right, Arian said, gripping Miles and Shelby by the scruffs of their neck. We were just leaving. None of us saw you here.
She herded the others before her.
We'll catch you later, Luce.
Shelby looked like she couldn't get out of their dorm room quickly enough. Miles's eyes looked stormy, and they stayed fixed on Luce until Arian practically threw him into the hall, slamming the door behind them with a great boom. Then Daniel came to Luce. She closed her eyes and let the brush of his nearness warm her. She breathed him in, glad to be home. Not home to Shoreline, but the home that Daniel made her feel. Even when she was in the strangest of places, even when their relationship was a mess, as it seemed to be now. He wasn't kissing her yet, wasn't even taking her in his arms. It surprised her that she wanted him to do those things, even after all she'd seen. The absence of his touch caused a pain deep within her chest. When she opened her eyes, he was standing there, only inches away, poring over every part of her with his violet eyes.
You scared me.
She'd never heard him say that. She was used to being the one who was afraid.
Are you all right?
He asked. Luce shook her head. Daniel took her hand and guided her wordlessly to the window, out of the warm room near the fire, and back into the cold night, onto the rough ledge under the window where he'd come to her before. The moon was oblong and low in the sky. The owls were asleep in the redwoods. From up here, Luce could see the waves breaking smoothly on the shore. On the other side of campus, a single light on high in the Nephilim Lodge, but she couldn't tell whether it was Francesca's or Stephen's. She and Daniel sat down on the ledge and dangled their legs. They leaned against the slight slope of the roof behind them and looked up at the stars, which were dim in the sky, as if cloaked by the thinnest sheen of cloud. It wasn't long before Luce began to cry. Because he was mad at her, or she was mad at him, because her body had just been through so much, in and out of announcers, across state lines, into the recent past, and right back here. Because her heart and her head were tangled up and confused, and being close to Daniel mucked everything up even more. Because Miles and Shelby seemed to hate him. Because of the plain horror on Vera's face when she recognized Luce. Because of all the tears that her sister must have cried for her, and because Luce had hurt her all over again by showing up at her blackjack table. Because of all of her other bereaved families, sunk into sadness, because their daughters had the bad luck to be the reincarnation of a stupid girl in love. Because thinking of those families made Luce desperately miss her parents back in Thunderbolt. Because she was responsible for Dawn's kidnapping. Because she was 17 and still alive against thousands of years' worth of odds. Because she knew enough to fear what the future would bring. Because, in the meantime, it was 3:30 in the morning, and she hadn't slept in days, and she didn't know what else to do. Now he held her, encasing her body in his warmth, drawing her into him and rocking her in his arms. She sobbed and hiccuped and wished for a tissue to blow her nose. She wondered how it was possible to feel so bad about so many things at once. "Shh," Daniel whispered. "Shh." A day ago, she'd been sick watching Daniel love her into oblivion in that announcer. The inescapable violence sown into their relationship had seemed insurmountable. But now, especially after talking with Arion, Luce could feel something big coming on. Something shifting, maybe the whole world shifting, with Luce and Daniel hovering right on the edge. It was all around them, in the ether, and it affected the way she saw herself and Daniel, too. The helpless looks she'd seen in his eyes in those just-before-dying moments, now they felt like they were the past. It reminded her of the way he'd looked at her after their first kiss in this life on the marshy beach near Sword and Cross. The taste of his lips on hers, the feel of his breath on her neck, his strong hands wrapped around her. It had all been so wonderful, except for the fear in his eyes. But Daniel hadn't looked at her like that in a while. The way he looked at her now surrendered nothing. He looked at her as if she were going to stick around, almost as if she had to. Things were different in this life. Everyone was saying it, and Luce could feel it too, a revelation growing ever larger inside her. She'd watched herself die, and she'd survived it. Daniel didn't have to shoulder his punishment alone anymore. It was something they could do together. "I want to say something," she said into his shirt, wiping her eyes on her sleeve. "I want to talk before you say anything." She could feel his chin brushing the top of her head. He was nodding. "I know you have to be careful about what you tell me. I know I've died before. But I'm not going anywhere this time, Daniel. I can feel it. At least, not without a fight." She tried to smile. "I think it will help us both to stop treating me like a fragile piece of glass. So I'm asking you, as your friend, as your girlfriend, as, you know, the love of your life, to let me in a little more. Otherwise, I just feel isolated and anxious and..." He caught her chin with his finger and tilted her head up. He was eyeing her curiously. She waited for him to interrupt, but he didn't. "I didn't leave Shoreline to spite you," she continued. "I left because I didn't understand why it mattered, and I put my friends in danger because of it." Daniel held her face in front of his. The violet in his eyes practically glowed. "I have failed you too many times before," he whispered. "And in this life, maybe I've erred on the side of caution. I should have known you'd test whatever boundary you were given. You wouldn't be the girl I loved if you didn't." Luce waited for him to smile down at her. He didn't. "There's just so much at stake this time around. I've been so focused on..."
"The outcasts?"
"They're the ones who took your friend," Daniel said. "They can barely identify right from left, let alone which side they're working for." Luce thought back to the girl Cam had shot with a silver arrow, to the good-looking, empty-eyed boy in the diner.
"Because they're blind."
Daniel looked down at his hands, rubbing his fingers together. He looked as if he might be sick.
"Blind, but very brutal."
He reached up and traced one of her blonde curls with his finger.
"You were smart to dye your hair. It kept you safe when I couldn't get there fast enough."
"Smart?" Luce was horrified. "Dawn could have died because I got my hands on a cheap bottle of bleach. How is that smart? If... If I dyed my hair black tomorrow, you mean the outcast would suddenly be able to find me?
Daniel shook his head roughly.
They shouldn't have found their way onto this campus at all. They should never have been able to get their hands on any of you. I am working night and day to keep them from you, from this whole school. Someone's aiding them, and I don't know who.
Cam, what else would he have been doing here? But Daniel shook his head.
Whoever it is will regret it.
Luce crossed her arms over her chest. Her face still felt hot from crying.
I guess this means I don't get to go home for Thanksgiving.
She closed her eyes, trying not to picture her parents' crestfallen faces.
Don't answer that.
Please.
Daniel's voice was so earnest.
It's only for a little while longer.
She nodded. The truce timeline.
What?
His hands gripped her shoulders tightly.
How did you...
I know.
Luce hoped he couldn't feel that her body had begun to tremble. It got worse when she tried to act more assured than she felt.
And I know that at some point soon, you will tip the balance between heaven and hell.
Who told you that?
Daniel was arching his shoulders back, which he knew meant he was trying to keep his wings from unfurling.
I figured it out. A lot goes on here when you're not around.
A hint of envy flashed through Daniel's eyes. At first, it felt almost good to be able to provoke that in him, but Luce didn't want to make him jealous, especially with so many bigger things at hand.
I'm sorry, she said. The last thing you need right now is me distracting you. What you're doing, it sounds like a pretty big deal.
She left it at that, hoping Daniel would feel comfortable enough to tell her more. This was the most open, honest, and mature conversation they'd had, maybe ever. But then, too soon, the cloud she hadn't even known she'd been dreading passed over Daniel's face.
Put all of that out of your head. You don't know what you think you know.
Disappointment flooded through Luce's body. He was still treating her like a child, one step forward, 10 steps back. She gathered her feet under her and stood up on the ledge.
I know one thing, Daniel, she said, staring down at him. If it were me, there wouldn't be a question. If it were me the whole universe was waiting on to tip the scales, I would just pick the side of good.
Daniel's violet eyes stared straight ahead into the shadowy forest.
You would just pick good, he repeated.
His voice sounded both numb and desperately sad, sadder than she'd ever heard him sound before. Luce had to resist the urge to crouch down and apologize. Instead, she turned, leaving Daniel behind her. Wasn't it obvious that he was supposed to pick good? Wouldn't anyone?
14. 5 days. Someone had ratted them out. On Sunday morning, while the rest of the campus was still eerily calm, Shelby, Miles, and Luce sat in a row on one side of Francesca's office, waiting to be interrogated. Her office was larger than Stephen's, brighter too, with a high sloping ceiling and 3 large windows facing the forest to the north, each with thick lavender velvet curtains, parted to show a shocking blue sky. A large framed photograph of a galaxy, hanging over the tall marble-topped desk, was the only piece of art in the room. The Baroque chairs they sat on were chic, but uncomfortable. Luce couldn't stop fidgeting.
Anonymous tip my ass, Shelby muttered, quoting the harsh email they'd each received from Francesca this morning. This immature tattling reeks of Lilith.
Luce didn't think it was possible that Lilith, or any of the students, really, would have known they'd left campus. Someone else had looped their teachers in.
What's taking them so long?
Miles nodded toward Stephen's office on the other side of the wall, where they could hear their teachers arguing in low voices.
It's like they're coming up with a punishment before they've even heard our side of the story.
He bit his lower lip.
What is our side of the story, by the way?
But Luce wasn't listening.
I really don't see what's so difficult, she said under her breath, more to herself than the others. You just pick a side and move on.
Huh?
Miles and Shelby said in unison.
Sorry, Luce said. It's just, you know what Aaron was saying about tipping the scales the other night? I brought it up to Daniel, and he got all weird. Seriously, how is it not obvious that there's a right answer here and a wrong one?
It's obvious to me, Miles said. There's a good choice and a bad choice.
How can you say that? Shelby asked. That kind of thinking is exactly what got us into this mess in the first place.
Blind faith. Blanket acceptance of a practically obsolete dichotomy.
Her face was turning red, and her voice had gotten loud enough that Francesca and Stephen could probably hear.
I am so sick of all these angels and demons taking sides. Blah, blah, blah. They're evil. No, they're evil. On and on, like they know what's best for everyone in the universe.
So you're suggesting Daniel side with evil? Miles scoffed. Bring on the end of the world?
I don't give a damn what Daniel does, Shelby said. And frankly, I find it hard to believe that it's all up to him anyway.
But it had to be. Luce couldn't think of any other explanation.
Look, maybe the lines aren't as clear-cut as we're taught they are, Shelby continued. I mean, who says Lucifer is so bad?
Everyone, Miles said, looking to Luce for support.
Wrong, Shelby barked. A group of very persuasive angels trying to preserve the status quo. Just because they won a big battle a long time ago, they think it gives them the right.
Luce watched Shelby's eyebrows bunch up as she slumped against the rigid back of her chair. Her words made Luce think of something she'd heard somewhere else. The victors rewrite history, she murmured. That was what Cam had said to her that day at Noyo Point. Wasn't that what Shelby meant? That the losers ended up with a bad rap? Their viewpoints were both similar, only Cam, of course, was legitimately evil. Right? And Shelby was just talking.
Exactly.
Shelby nodded at Luce.
Wait, what?
Just then, Francesca and Stephen walked through the door. Francesca lowered herself into the black swivel chair at her desk. Stephen stood behind her, his hands resting lightly on the back of the chair. He looked as breezy in his jeans and crisp white shirt as Francesca looked severe in her tailored black dress with a rigid square-cut neckline. It brought to Luce's mind Shelby's talk about blurred lines and the connotations of words like angel and demon. Of course it was superficial to make judgments based solely on Stephen's and Francesca's clothing. But then again, it wasn't just that. In a lot of ways, it was easy to forget which one of them was which.
"Who wants to go first?" Francesca asked, resting her interlaced, manicured hands on the marble desktop.
"We know everything that happened, so don't even bother contesting those details. This is your chance to tell us why."
Luce inhaled deeply. Though she hadn't been prepared for Francesca to turn over the floor so soon, she didn't want Miles or Shelby trying to cover for her.
"It was my fault," she said. "I wanted to..."
She looked at Stephen's drawn expression, then down at her lap.
"I saw something in the announcers, something from my past, and I wanted to see more."
"And so you went for a dangerous joyride, an unauthorized passage through an announcer, imperiling two of your classmates, who really should have known better, the day after another one of your classmates was kidnapped?" Francesca asked.
"That's not fair," Luce said. "You were the one downplaying what happened to Dawn. We thought we were just going to look into something, but..."
"But,"
Stephen prodded.
"But you realize now how utterly moronic that line of thinking was."
Luce gripped her chair's armrest, trying to fight back tears. Francesca was cross with all three of them, but it seemed that all of Stephen's fury was coming down solely on Luce. It wasn't fair.
"Yes, okay, we snuck out of school and went to Vegas," she said finally. "But the only reason we were in danger was because you kept me in the dark. You knew someone was after me, and you probably even know why. I wouldn't have left campus if you'd just told me."
Stephen stared Luce down with eyes like fire.
"If you're saying we honestly have to be that explicit with you, Luce, then I am disappointed."
He cupped a hand on Francesca's shoulder.
"Perhaps you were right about her, dear."
"Wait," Luce said.
But Francesca made a stop sign with her hand.
"Need we also be explicit about the fact that the opportunity you've been given at Shoreline for educational and personal growth is, for you, a once-in-a-thousand lifetimes experience?"
A pink flush rose on her cheeks.
"You've created a very awkward situation for us. The main school," she gestured to the south portion of campus, "has its detentions and its community service programs for students who step out of line. But Stephen and I don't have a system of punishment in place. We've been fortunate, until now, to have students who did not overstep our very lenient boundaries."
"Until now," Stephen said, looking at Luce. "But Francesca and I both agree that a swift and severe sentence must be handed down."
Luce leaned forward in her chair.
"But Shelby and Miles didn't..."
Exactly, Francesca nodded. Which is why, when you are dismissed, Shelby and Miles will report to Mr. Kramer in the main school for community service. Shoreline's annual Harvest Fest food drive begins tomorrow, so I'm sure you'll have your work cut out for you.
What a crock of... Shelby broke off, looking up at Francesca. I mean, Harvest Fest sounds like my kind of fun.
What about Luce? Miles asked.
Stephen's arms were crossed, and his complicated hazel eyes peered down at Luce over the tortoiseshell rims of his glasses.
Effectively, Luce, you're grounded.
Grounded? That was it? Class, meals, dorm, Francesca recited. Until you hear differently from us, and unless you are under our strict supervision, these are the only places you will be permitted, and no dipping into announcers. Understand? Luce nodded. Stephen added,
Do not test us again. Even our patience comes to an end.
Class, meals, dorm didn't leave Luce with a lot of options on a Sunday morning. The lodge was dark, and the mess hall didn't open for brunch until 11. After Miles and Shelby shuffled off reluctantly toward Mr. Kramer's community service boot camp, Luce had no choice but to go back to her room. She closed the window shade, which Shelby always liked to leave open, then sank into her desk chair. It could have been worse. Compared to the stories of cramped cinderblock cells for solitary confinement at Sword and Cross, it almost seemed like she was getting off easy. No one was slapping a pair of wristband tracking devices on her. In fact, Stephen and Francesca had basically given her the same restrictions Daniel had. The difference was, her teachers really could watch over her night and day. Daniel, on the other hand, wasn't supposed to be there at all. Annoyed, she powered up her computer, half expecting her access to the internet to be suddenly restricted. But she logged on, just as usual, and found 3 emails from her parents and 1 from Callie. Maybe the bright side of being grounded was that she'd be forced to finally stay in better contact with her friends and family. 2. LucindaP44@gmail.com. From thegaprices@aol.com. Sent Friday, November 20, at 8:22 a.m. Subject, Turkey Dog. Check out this picture. We dressed Andrew up as a turkey for the neighborhood autumn block party. As you can tell from the bite marks on the feathers, he loved it. What do you think? Should we make him wear it again when you come for Thanksgiving? 2. LucindaP44@gmail.com. From thegaprices@aol.com. Sent Friday, November 20 at 9:06 a.m. Subject, P.S. Your dad read my email and thought it might have made you feel bad. No guilt trip intended, sweetie. If you're allowed to come home for Thanksgiving, we'd love it. If you can't, we'll reschedule for another time. We love you. 2. LucindaP44@gmail.com. From thegaprices@aol.com. Sent Saturday, November 21 at 12:12 a.m. Subject, no subject. Just let us know either way. XOXO, Mom. Luce held her head in her hands. She'd been wrong. All the grounding in the world wouldn't make it easier for her to respond to her parents. They dressed their poodle up as a turkey, for crying out loud. It broke her heart to think of letting them down. So she procrastinated by opening Callie's email. 2. LucindaP44@gmail.com. From CallieAllieOxenfree@gmail.com. Sent Friday, November 20 at 4:14 p.m. Subject, here it is. I believe the flight reservation below speaks for itself. Send me your address, and I'll take a cab when I get in on Thursday morning. My first time in Georgia, with my long-lost best friend. It's going to be so peachy. See you in 6 days. In less than a week, Luce's best friend would be showing up for Thanksgiving at her parents' house. Her parents would be expecting her, and Luce would be right here, grounded in her dorm room. An enormous sadness engulfed her. She would have given anything to go to them, to spend a few days with people who loved her, who would give her a break from the exhausting, confusing couple of weeks she'd spent shackled within these wooden walls. She opened a new email and composed a hasty message. To cole321@swordandcross.edu. From lucindap44@gmail.com. Sent Sunday, November 22nd, at 9:33 a.m. Hi, Mr. Cole.
Don't worry, I'm not going to beg you to let me go home for Thanksgiving. I know a hopeless waste of effort when I see one. But I don't have the heart to tell my parents. Will you let them know? Tell them I'm sorry. Things here are fine. Sort of. I am homesick. Luce. A thumping knock at the door made Luce jump and click send on the email without proofreading it first for typos or embarrassing admissions of emotion. Luce! Shelby's voice called from the other side. Open up! My hands are full of harvest fest crap. I mean bounty. The thuds continued on the other side of the door, louder now, with the occasional whimpering grunt thrown in. Pulling open the door, Luce found a panting Shelby sagging under the weight of an enormous cardboard box. She had several stretched-out plastic bags threaded through her fingers. Her knees trembled as she staggered into the room. "Can I help with something?" Luce took the feather-light wicker cornucopia that was resting on Shelby's head like a conical hat. "They put me on decorations," Shelby grumbled, heaving the box onto the ground. "I'd give anything to be on garbage like Miles. Do you even know what happened the last time someone made me use a hot glue gun?" Luce felt responsible for both Shelby's and Miles's punishments. She pictured Miles combing the beach with one of those trash-poking sticks she'd seen convicts using on the side of the road in Thunderbolt. "I don't even know what Harvest Fest is." "Obnoxious and pretentious, that's what," Shelby said, digging through the box and tossing onto the floor plastic bags of feathers, tubs of glitter, and a ream of autumn-colored construction paper. "It's basically a big banquet where all of Shoreline's donors come out to raise money for the school. Everyone goes home feeling all charitable because they unloaded a few old cans of green beans on a food bank in Fort Bragg. You'll see tomorrow night." "I doubt it," Luce said. "Remember, I'm grounded." "Don't worry, you'll be dragged to this. Some of the biggest donors are angel advocates, so Frankie and Steven have to put on a show. Which means the Nephilim all have to be there, smiling pretty." Luce frowned, glancing up at her non-Nephilim reflection in the mirror. All the more reason she should stay right here. Shelby cursed under her breath. "I left the stupid paint-by-number turkey centerpiece in Mr. Kramer's office," she said, standing up and giving the box of decorations a kick. "I have to go back." When Shelby pushed past her toward the door, Luce lost her balance and started to tumble, tripping over the box and snagging her foot on something cold and wet on the way down. She landed face first on the wood floor. The only thing breaking her fall was the plastic bag of feathers, which popped, shooting colorful fluff out from under her. Luce looked back to see how much damage she had done, expecting Shelby's eyebrows to be joined in exasperation. But Shelby was standing still, with one hand pointing toward the center of the room. A smog brown announcer was quietly floating there. "Isn't that a little risky?" Shelby asked. "Summoning an announcer an hour after getting busted for summoning an announcer? You really don't listen at all, do you? I kind of admire that." "I didn't summon it," Luce insisted, pulling herself up and picking the feathers out of her clothes. "I tripped and it was just there, waiting or something." She stepped closer to examine the hazy, dun-colored sheet. It was as flat as a piece of paper and not large for an announcer, but the way it hung in the air in front of her face, almost daring her to reject it, made Luce nervous. It didn't seem to need her to guide it into shape at all. It hovered, barely moving, looking like it could have floated there all day. "Wait a minute," Luce murmured. "This came in with the other one the other day. Don't you remember?" This was the strange brown shadow that had flown in 10 days. "Don't you remember?" This was the strange brown shadow that had flown in tandem with the darker shadow that took them to Vegas. They'd both come in through the window Friday afternoon. Then this one had disappeared. Luce had forgotten about it until now. "Well," Shelby said, leaning against the ladder of the bunk bed, "are you going to glimpse it or what?" The announcer was the color of a smoky room, noxious brown and mist-like to the touch. Luce reached for it, running her fingers along its clammy limits. She felt its cloudy breath brush back her hair. The air around this announcer was humid, even briny. A faraway croon of seagulls echoed from within. She shouldn't glimpse it, wouldn't glimpse it. But there was the announcer, shifting from a smoky brown mesh into something clear and discernible, independently of Luce. There was the message cast by its shadow coming to life. It was an aerial view of an island. At first, they were high above,
so that all Luce could see was a small swell of steep black rock with a fringe of tapered pine trees ringing its base. Then, slowly, the announcer zoomed in, like a bird swooping down to roost in the treetops, its focus a small deserted beach. The water was murky from the clay-like silver sand. A scattering of boulders reckoned with the smooth intentions of the tide. And standing inconspicuously between two of the tallest rocks, Daniel was staring at the sea. The tree branch in his hand was covered in blood. Luce gasped as she leaned closer and saw what Daniel was looking at. Not the sea, but a bloody mess of a man, a dead man lying stiff on the sand. Each time the waves reached the body, they receded, stained a deep, dark red. But Luce couldn't see the wound that had killed the man. Someone else, in a long black trench coat, was crouched over the body, tying it up with thick braided rope. Her heart thudding, Luce looked again at Daniel. His expression was even, but his shoulders were twitching.
"Hurry up! You're wasting time! The tide's going out now, anyway."
His voice was so cold, it made Luce shiver. A second later, the scene in the announcer disappeared. Luce held her breath until it dropped to the ground in a heap. Then, across the room, the window shade Luce had pulled down earlier rattled open. Luce and Shelby shot each other an anxious look, then watched as a gust of wind caught the announcer and lofted it up and out the window. Luce clutched Shelby's wrist. "You notice everything. Who else was there with Daniel? Who was crouched over that?" She shivered again. "Guy." "Gee, I don't know, Luce. I was kind of distracted by the dead body. Not to mention the bloody tree your boyfriend was holding." Shelby's attempt to be sarcastic was diminished by how terrified she sounded. "So he killed him?" she asked Luce. "Daniel killed whoever that was?" "I don't know." Luce winced. "Don't say it like that. Maybe there's a logical explanation." "What do you think he was saying at the end?" Shelby asked. "I saw his lips move, but I couldn't make it out. I hate that about announcers." "Hurry up. You're wasting time. The tide's going out now, anyway." Shelby hadn't heard that? How callous and unremorseful Daniel sounded? Then Luce remembered. It wasn't that long ago that she couldn't hear the announcers either. Before, their noises used to be just that. Noises, rustlings and thick, wet whooshes through treetops. It was Stephen who told her how to tune in the voices inside. In a way, Luce almost wished he hadn't. There had to be more to this message. "I have to glimpse it again," Luce said, stepping toward the open window. Shelby tugged her back.
"Oh, no, you don't. That announcer could be anywhere by now, and you're under dorm arrest, remember?"
Shelby pushed Luce down in her desk chair.
"You're going to stay right here while I go down to Kramer's office to retrieve my turkey. We're both going to forget this ever happened, okay?"
"Okay."
"Good. I'll be back in 5 minutes, so don't disappear on me."
But as soon as the door closed, Luce was out the window, climbing to the flat part of the ledge where she and Daniel had sat the night before. Putting what she'd just seen out of her mind was impossible. She had to summon that shadow again, even if it got her in more trouble, even if she saw something she didn't like. The late morning had turned gusty, and Luce had to crouch down and hold onto the slanting wooden shingles to keep her balance. Her hands were cold. Her heart felt numb. She closed her eyes. Every time she tried to summon an announcer, she remembered how little training she'd had. She'd always just been lucky, if watching your boyfriend look down at someone he'd just murdered could be considered luck. A damp brushing crept along her arms. Was it the brown shadow, the ugly thing that showed her an even uglier thing? Her eyes shot open. It was, creeping up her shoulder like a snake. She yanked it off and held it in front of her, trying to spin it into a ball with her hands. The announcer rejected her touch, floating backward, out of her reach, just past the roof's edge. She looked down two stories to the ground below. A trail of students were leaving the dorm to head to the mess hall for brunch, a stream of color moving along a sheet of bright green grass. Luce teetered. Vertigo hit, and she felt herself falling forward. But then the shadow rushed like a football player, knocking her back against the slope of the roof. There she stayed, stuck against the shingles, panting as the announcer yawned open again. The smoky veil diffused into light, and Luce was back with Daniel and his bloody branch. Back to the caw of seagulls circling overhead,
and the stench of rotting surf along the shore, the sight of icy waves crashing on the beach, and back to the two figures huddled on the ground. The dead one was all tied up. The living one stood to face Daniel.
Cam.
No. It had to be a mistake. They hated one another, had just waged a huge battle against one another. She could accept that Daniel did dark things to protect her from the people who were after her. But what foul thing would ever make him seek out Cam? Work alongside Cam, who took pleasure in killing? They were in a heated discussion of some sort, but Luce couldn't make out the words. She couldn't hear anything over the clock in the middle of the terrace, which had just struck 11. She strained her ears, waiting for the gongs to cease.
"Let me take her to Shoreline," she finally heard Daniel plead.
This must have been right before she arrived in California. But why should Daniel have to ask Cam's permission? Unless...
"Fine," Cam said evenly. "Take her as far as the school and then find me. Don't screw up. I'll be watching." "And then..."
Daniel sounded nervous. Cam ran his eyes over Daniel's face.
"You and I have work to do."
"No," Lou screamed, slashing at the shadow with her fingers in anger. But as soon as she felt her hands break through the cold, slippery surface, she regretted it. It broke into spent fragments, settling into an ashy pile at her side. Now she couldn't see anymore. She tried to gather the fragments up the way she'd seen Miles do, but they were quivering and unresponsive. She grabbed a fistful of the worthless pieces, sobbing into them. Stephen had said that sometimes the announcers distorted what was real, like the shadows cast on the cave wall, but that there was always some truth to them, too. Luce could feel the truth in the cold, soggy pieces, even as she wrung them out, trying to squeeze out all her agony. Daniel and Cam weren't enemies. They were partners. 15. 4 days.
More tofurkey?
Connor Mattson, a tow-headed kid from Luce's biology class and one of Shoreline's student waiters, stood over her with a silver platter at the Harvest Fest on Monday night.
No, thanks. Luce pointed down at the thick stack of lukewarm fake meat slices still on her plate.
Maybe later.
Connor and the rest of the scholarship waitstaff at Shoreline were suited up for the Harvest Fest in tuxedos and ridiculous pilgrim hats. They glided past each other on the terrace, which was nearly unrecognizable as the swanky, casual place to grab some pancakes before class. It had been transformed into a full-fledged outdoor banquet hall. Shelby was still grumbling as she moved from table to table, adjusting place cards and relighting candles. She and the rest of the decorations committee had done a beautiful job. Red and orange silk leaves had been strewn across the long white tablecloths. Fresh-baked dinner rolls were arranged inside gold-painted cornucopias. Heat lamps took the edge off the brisk ocean breeze. Even the paint-by-number turkey centerpieces looked stylish. All the students, the faculty, and about 50 of the school's biggest donors had turned out in their finest for the dinner. Dawn and her parents had driven up for the night. Though Luce hadn't gotten a chance to talk to Dawn yet, she looked recovered, even happy, and had waved to Luce cheerfully from her seat next to Jasmine. Most of the 20 or so Nephilim were seated together at two adjacent circular tables, with the exception of Roland, who was sitting in a faraway corner with a mysterious date. Then the mysterious date stood up, lifted her broad, rosebud-shaped hat, and gave Luce a sneaky little wave. Arian. Despite herself, Luce smiled, but a second later she felt close to tears. Watching those two snickering together reminded Luce of the sickeningly sinister scene she'd glimpsed in the announcer the day before. Like Cam and Daniel, Arian and Roland were supposed to be on opposite sides, but everybody knew they were a team. Still, that felt different somehow. Harvest Fest was supposed to be a last pre-Thanksgiving hurrah before classes were dismissed. Then everyone else would have another Thanksgiving, a real Thanksgiving, with their families. For Luce, it was the only Thanksgiving she was going to get. Mr. Cole hadn't written her back. After yesterday's grounding and then the rooftop revelation, she was having a hard time feeling thankful for much of anything.
"You're hardly eating," Francesca said, spooning a great dollop of shiny mashed potatoes onto Luce's plate.
Luce was growing more attuned to the thrilling glow that fell over everything when Francesca was talking to her. Francesca possessed an otherworldly charisma, simply by virtue of being an angel. She beamed at Luce, like there'd been no meeting in her office yesterday,
like Luce wasn't under lock and key. Luce had been given the seat of honor at the expansive faculty head table next to Francesca. All the donors came by in a stream to shake hands with the faculty. The three other students at the head table, Lilith, Beaker Brady, and a Korean girl with a dark bob Luce didn't know, had applied for their seats in an essay contest. All Luce had to do was piss off her teachers enough that they were afraid to let her out of their sight. The meal was finally wrapping up when Stephen leaned forward in his chair. Like Francesca, he displayed none of yesterday's venom.
"Make sure Luce introduces herself to Dr. Buchanan."
Francesca popped the last bite of a buttered cornbread muffin into her mouth. "Buchanan's one of the biggest supporters of the school," she told Luce. "You might have heard of his Devils Abroad